Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
His name, former producer Lightning.
Everybody say hey!
Lightning can be deadly. Don't take chances with Lightning.
You keep me waiting till it's getting aggravating. You're the slowpoke.
Everybody say ho!
I wait and worry, but you never seem to hurry. You're the slowpoke.
Everybody scream!
Time means nothing to you. I wait and then late again. 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, quarter to ten.
When lightning strikes, people listen.
Producer, lightning is magic.
It's lightning in the house. Hey, what's going on?
He is lightning. Scorsese.
I didn't save anyone's life.
Act that as if you did.
Are you stoned?
Oh yeah.
Why should I keep trying to change you? It's not the thing to do. I guess I'll have to learn to be a slowpoke too.
We got a winner!
Oh yeah!
You guys are—you're a bunch of assholes.
That is our motto.
Yeah. Well, we try. Well, we go back a long time. I remember that thing, you know, from when I was listening to the Kevin and Bean Show.
Yeah, that's a Bean. That's a Bean jingle right there. I had never heard it before. He, I don't know, dusted it off and brought it in on vinyl. I'm fairly certain.
The stuff, yeah. Bean has, either in sound file or in physical form, is just mind blowing, isn't it?
Yeah, and his ability to be talking to you, to be having a conversation, and then simultaneously be looking at the next drop, you know, looking or going through his machine of tens of thousands of sound bites and having it queued up so he knows you're going to say something and he's got it at the ready, is it's mind blowing. It's a talent I've never seen anyone else, you know, boast. So, yeah, before we get into this thing, what the hell with the podcast? So tell me about how you guys got together.
That's another motto. That's
well, it's all your slogan. Fault.
What the hell with our podcast?
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. Well, how that's all
this,
your
how
fault.
How did this happen? How do we have listeners? This is so Inception.
It is.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, a lot of it is because of you, basically.
Yeah.
You started in March 25th. You started the social club in 2020. And we, you know, that became such a big, I don't even know, connection, in the sense where it's like, I would just refresh that thing all day long. And what are other people talking about and what's going on? And just trying to, you know, like everyone has said, you know, that was our daily show. And those were our friends that we listened to every morning and all that kind of stuff. And so we kind of came to know each other through that.
That's fantastic. Yeah. That was not intended. And it was definitely not intentional. And I'm glad that's a happy accident. Did we start that right after Kevin and Allie were blown out? I don't know.
About a week later.
Like, yeah. Yeah. It seemed like a reaction. Someone, was it Jen who started one up on like Twitter or somewhere? So there was another platform. Someone had started a Kevin and Bean group on Instagram or something. And I thought, well, that's not going to be very interactive. It needs to be on a Facebook group, you know, and that's where, you know, we're all old now and we're all on Facebook, you know, it's not TikTok or whatever. I mean, except Lindsay up here, she's like 12,
I know.
But we're all on Facebook. Obviously I thought that was, let's do this. And it quickly grew to like more than 3,000 members. Although I am a little disappointed. I expected it to be over 10,000 at this point. I got to be honest, but maybe some of that is due to, I had expected to post more often myself and that didn't really happen. I've just been so busy doing other things. I have to post for my podcast and this day job where it's a Saturday now. And I'm here at work, unfortunately. So I run like six different social accounts. So the one that suffers is my own, but Yeah, I mean, it's super cool. You know, I know we have mostly normal people on the Kevin and Bean Social Club, and then a few freaks that piss everyone else off that every once in a while we have to eject. It's great. I don't know. I do see a great flow of content on the Social Club. I see a lot of people reminiscing. You know, I think it's funny when people will talk about, you know, K-Rock, the radio station, and their opinions of it yesteryear or today, and then that will fire people up. And then others will chime in and go, this is not about K-Rock. This is about Kevin and Bean. And they were an island unto themselves. And I just find that all this dialogue good and powerful and humorous. And so anyway, it's like I said, happy accident. Where were you guys when we needed you as employees back in the day? Now I'm staring at four producers here, and it was impossible. I got stuck with Big Tad. You know?
In high school and in college, that's where I was. So.
I can't say that I would have been any better than Big Tad when I was that age.
God. The funny thing is, a couple of times I would email stuff to Ralph. This was later on in the run of the show. And he's like, this guy's funny. We should hire him. And I would say, here I am. I'd email him my number. Never got a call back.
Yeah. I mean, the dynamic, though, in radio is that it's so fast paced and you don't have time, and it's uncomfortable to reach out to new people. Even when Ralph started or Jimmy started, whoever, you get this nucleus of a few people and you rely on them for everything because there's a comfort. It's too hard to train someone to bring someone into that fold, into that family, and get them spun up fast enough. So you just keep going to the same well. When someone new comes along, like a Jimmy and Adam or Ralph, whoever, you just tap into that person for everything. They're not just the writer. They're the voice guy. They're the on-site entertainment. They do everything. And because it's too harder to have these extraneous people and retrain them and then not be sure that they're going to deliver. So I find that we all do that in our personal lives and, you know, in our professional lives. You've got the people right around you. It's usually less than five that you can count on for everything. And that's no different in radio.
Yeah, I was thinking you guys didn't have time to mess around. You guys had to get the show on you, and you were doing it on the fly. So you couldn't train somebody. You couldn't tell them what you needed. They had to do it and know what they were doing.
It's weird. It's the opposite of television, where you have a person who records, shoots a TV show, and then it's edited, and then it goes on, then it gets in, and it's in repeats forever, and they get paid forever. And radio, every morning at 5:35, there's a reset button. Yes. Nothing you did yesterday counts. Well, until later on when they started repeating the entire 6 o'clock and 9 o'clock hours, which sucked. But for the first more than a decade, everything was fresh from that 5:35 break all the way through to 9:40 or 9:50 when we signed off, or 10:05 when Mr. Weatherby would slam the door open and go, come on, it's Richard Blades up next. Get out of the way, you know. And that part was grueling, and I didn't really understand the phases that we would go through until I went through them, which is you go through an incredibly tired phase where you're physically tired because it burns you out. You're getting up really early. You have to stay out late because there's late night TV that you need to review, or there was events that you had to go to, or you wanted to have a social life because all of your friends go out for a 7 p.m. dinner. You know, we don't go out for a 4 p.m. dinner. Who does that? 90-year-olds in Lake Havasu. You know, you just don't do that. And so you go through this burnout phase, and then then that turns into what Kevin coined soul tired, which now you're not physically tired anymore. You go through a period where you're just not happy about anything. You're never smiling. Everything sucks. It's where your relationships fall apart. It's where your girlfriend or significant other, boyfriend, they don't make you happy anymore. Nothing makes you happy. And that's just absolute burnout. And then eventually you just work your way through that. And no matter, vacations can't help. Nothing helps. You just have to work your way through it. It's like a borderline depression thing. And then we pop through it. But on the air, no one knows that that's happening. But off the air, it's obvious when someone was going through it, whether it was Kevin, Bean, Ralph, Jimmy, myself, anyone. You know, we all went through those. And so there was that weird kind of dark where you just give it your all. And I think that, you know, looking, I can't speak to Stryker at all. He and I are acquaintances and we're friendly. I'm guessing he was going through some of those things. That's why he, you know, recently bailed out, and he's got his own podcast now. If any of your listeners follow what Stryker's up to. I don't even know. I'm just going on a rant. Go ahead, say something, and then I'll react. Oh,
you were talking about this burnout. You were on the radio for like 20 years, right? 1992 through 2017, 2018, 2019?
It ended up being just shy of 26 years.
Wow. So did you go through that cycle like multiple times?
Yeah. Yeah, and burned through like 4 or 5 girlfriends, separated from my wife twice.
Wow.
Yeah. Those were contributing factors for sure. And they could just caused issues with all of us. You know, I suspect everyone had issues in their personal life because of that, you know, but we were all willing to trade it. We all loved what we did so much, like truly just obsessive about it. And I think that, you know, you go back to my theme that you brought me onto, the lightning slowpoke theme, is that when I was in college when I joined, and I was either going to go into real estate or car audio, or like I wasn't thinking radio, and I didn't understand what it was all about. And I had never been in any atmosphere that was that fast paced. You know, are you trying to shoo the dog away, Jen? Exactly what's happening here.
She's trying to go after a squirrel.
Oh yeah, yeah. Squirrel. That's what I was doing when you were looking elsewhere. Squirrel. And I don't see, now I lost my train of thought. We're all on the squirrel now.
Before we go on, why don't you tell us, how did you get a job at K-Rock? And
That's where I was going with all that. Beginning. I was in college. I was 20 and I was taking real estate classes and business classes. And I fancied myself an entrepreneur, and I was selling car audio equipment. I was big into that whole scene, as you recall, back in the mini truck days, when all the mini trucks, you know, what the mini truck today is, they were like lower Toyota trucks and Nissans, and they had speakers filling the beds. And that was me. I was doing that stuff, and I was selling those products to those guys. And I thought, all right, I'm going to learn more about business. And I was also really into just audio in general. And I thought that if I wasn't good at business, maybe I'll go into I want to be a Foley engineer, wildly different, but I want to be the guy that makes sound effects, that takes coconuts and knocks them together like a horse's hoof, right? Yeah. And does all that stuff. And so in high school, I was the guy behind the scenes making sound effects while the actors were on stage playing a part. I was literally with coconut, you know, doing stuff like that, or recording everything and doing it. And so I took a couple entertainment classes at Rancho Santiago College and at Fullerton College here locally about sound design and radio and whatnot. And they passed around a form one day in this entertainment class, and it was for internships at Pirate Radio and at KLOS and at one other station. They said, hey, if you're really into audio, you should check one of these things out. And so I applied for both of those. And I recall getting all the way to Culver City to go interview with someone at KLOS. And I get to the foot of the building and I go, I don't want to work for Mark and Brian. Like, that's not my jam. So I turned around and went home and just flaked on the interview. And wow. I got home and I told my girlfriend, and she says, why would you even apply there? It's like, you listen to K-Rock. Why don't you just apply? We hear Michelle on Richard Blade. So they clearly have Richard always had his interns and phone ops on the show. And we had heard a few on Kevin and Bean. And so she actually got the form faxed to her office. She was working at a bank or something, and got the form faxed over, and I filled it out and I drove it up to Burbank. And I didn't hear anything for like 3 months. And I got a call one day, and it was from Maria D'Arcangelo, the new morning show producer. And she was looking for interns. So I drove up and I walk in the front lobby, and the K-Rock sign is halfway hanging off the wall. And then the 9 button, because we're on the 9th floor, the 9 button was popped out. So I went to go push the 9, and someone had, you know, pried it out of the elevator, right? So there was every floor, but 9. 9 was missing. It was just an LED sticking straight out with no 9 in it. I figured, oh, that's got to be the right floor. put your hand in. You're like, am I going to burn my finger? You put it in there, go to 9. And I get up there and I'm wearing, now, mind you, I think I'm going to be a business guy somehow in life, right? So I'm wearing not a suit, but a button down shirt and a tie. I'm going for an interview. And I open the door and there's two kids sitting on the couch waiting to get in as well. And they both have, both dudes have mascara on, dark. They're right out of Depeche Mode, 1987. You know what I mean? So I'm like, oh, I'm dead in the water. Like, I do not fit this at all. This is going to go bad. They bring me back and I talk to Maria, and she had just left CAA. She worked for Michael Ovitz. She was Michael Ovitz's assistant. And she had before that just graduated Emerson. And so she was all buttoned up. You know, she had the suit and the whole 9. So she just instantly, we hit it off. I did not expect that, but she wanted someone who wasn't there as a groupie, who didn't want to meet Depeche Mode. I was there to work. I was there to learn about audio, to learn about what they were doing. And so she started me off, and the week that I started as an intern, Kevin and Bean were on their Yep, There It Is summer vacation, where they were touring across the country. It was the one where they famously shaved their heads. And they drank fireballs or whatever the drink was, and they got ripped. And well, I still don't think Bean was drunk, but Kevin probably was. Yeah. And they went into a barbershop and got their heads shaved bald. And so the first day they walked, I will never forget. I'm sitting there. So it's Maria, trying to think of the layout of the room. Maria's over at her desk. I'm here at my little like makeshift desk, with all my almanacs and all the LA Times and stuff that I had to go through back in the day, because there was no internet, remind you, in 1991. This would have been in June of 1991. And the door swings open. It's 5:25 or so. And I look up and there's these two giant bald guys from the Aryan Nation wearing cowboy hats staring at me. And they're like, hey, you're the new intern. I'm like, hi. And they just walked straight in to the studio. And I was like, oh shit, what happened? I mean, being 6'6", right? And Kevin is 6'4". And that was day one on the job. And I didn't understand the pace. And I've told this story many, many times. So if any of your listeners have heard me blabber before, I apologize. But in radio, and I'm sure it's the same in television, when someone says, I need that thing in a minute, they don't mean like a minute when you get a minute, when you have a chance. They mean that in 59 seconds, if you don't give me the piece of paper, the mic is open and I'm talking and I'm blasting you on the air for not giving me that piece of paper. Not 61 seconds. That's too late. 60 seconds. And I didn't understand that at first. And I was trying to get my wits about me. So very quickly, they thought I was slow. I didn't understand how imperative everything was. And I was trying to navigate the land. And so, yeah, I was either going to be Curious George or Lightning. Curious George is because I asked so many questions. I was all, how does this work? What does this do? How does this? And many times if they were technical, Bean had no idea. He would defer me to Scott Mason or Taru Onuki or any of the engineers. And so it was, and the Lightning thing stuck because of the Amos and Andy drops and, you know, the slowpoke theme and some other things. So that one stuck. And so I worked at, I was an intern. Yeah. A maximum then of, these are unpaid internships. Now that's illegal. You cannot have an unpaid internship in the state of California. But back then I worked 6 months for the morning show. So it was me and Kennedy, who's now Fox's Kennedy, right? And Rob Goldklang, he's now one of the muckety mucks at Warner Brothers. And these people have all gone on to some big things. And I did my first 6 month stint there. And then if you wanted to stay, you had to change departments. So I really wanted to stay. It was unlike anything I'd ever been a part of. So then I couldn't stay in the morning show because there was no openings at that point. They had to bring in someone new or something like that. I don't recall, so many years ago. But Scott Mason said, you know, you're pretty bright and I need someone to help me out. So for the next 6 months, I went to go work for Scott Mason in engineering. I would go up to Verdugo Peak to the transmitter and sweep the transmitter. And I would look at all the logs, and every time Jed the Fish forgot to sign a log, or he would wrote like, you know, like snort cocaine or whatever, I would have to go in and go, no, you need to really sign your name here. Right. And I would, and that was part of my job. And then that year ended And I was really sad. I was like, I just committed a year. And my father this whole time said, you're being taken advantage of. They're just, they're going to burn right through you. They're not going to hire you. They're just getting free labor. They know it. You know it. Just own up to it and go get a real job. And so I was really bummed at the end of the year, and it ended. And Scott Mason said, I know you're really, really passionate about this. I'm going to give you $6 an hour and you can stay on with me. And that allowed me to get a key card and stay in the building. And it wasn't more than like a couple of weeks after that happened that Kennedy was moved into, they had fired Mark the Wiffle Boy. Mark the Wiffle Boy was the board op at that time. And their Lightning, their Big Tad. He was the whipping boy.
Stunt guy. Yeah,
he was the boy. Original stunt boy. Correct. Yeah. And he got in an almost a fist fight with Kevin in Studio C in John Frost studio. And that was his last day. And they immediately brought in Kennedy to be the board op. Now, Kennedy was an awful, awful board op, but she was very talented as far as on the air. And she had a personality bigger than life, as everyone who watches Fox today knows, and MTV before that. Anyway, so she segued into that position, standing behind Kevin, and I got the phone op position. So now I was a full-time phone op at like 30 hours a week or whatever. I was driving 50 miles from Orange County to Burbank each way. And I was for $6 an hour. And eventually I think Kennedy got the job at MTV. Kennedy didn't produce at all. Kennedy just barely could run the board. She didn't know how to edit tape or any of that stuff. I mean, some minor stuff. But when I was moved into the board op position, all the production work became mine. Every day they would go out and tape. They would go to Bill Nye, the Science Guy, had one of the first electric cars. And so Kevin and Bean would hop in, Bill Nye, his electric car, and go to the gas station, sit at the gas station and mock people who had to fill up with gas, you know, because this is in the, you know, 90, I don't know, four, something like that. You know, like, oh, gas is so archaic. Look at our car. It's electric. Anyway, that audio would come back. Kevin Lee would drive it back to me after lunch. And then I would edit that and then put it on the air the next morning, you know, put it on cart or reel to reel, whatever. And so that was my gig. So during the show, I'm running the board when Kevin runs the board while he's talking, as you guys, or did, right? Kevin would talk. And as soon as they went to commercial, he slides back in his chair and I walk up and then I run the board through the commercial break and do everything so he can prep for the next thing. And that's still the way that they do it today. Even with Klein and Ali and Beer Mug, he does that. So Klein will, as soon as they go to commercial, he slides out of the way and Beer Mug slides in and runs the stop set, the commercial break. And it lasted that way. It was that way for years. So, and basically there was Maria D'Arcangelo, and then there was Frank Murphy, and then there was Cortland Cox and Jimmy and Mark Davis and some other people that came through there, like kind of officially morning show producers. Frank was really a morning show producer. Maria D'Arcangelo was really a morning show producer. Cortland Cox was kind of somewhat a morning show producer. And then at some point it was Cortland and I, and Cortland, if you don't know that name, he now is one of the exec producers of that. Is it Above Board, Below Board? It's that show where they all live on a ship. Do you know the show I'm talking about? Oh, the reality show.
Yeah.
The reality show. He does that. Yeah. So anyway, he went on to TV. He was a TV guy. And Cortland and Adam and Ralph were all roommates in a house in La Cañada. And that's how they all met. Yeah. And that's how we got them all. Right. Talking about, can you imagine that house, right?
I want a reality show on that. Or
that'd have been like amazing. Yeah.
Mad Men Ralph. Show back in the day, following those guys. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, Adam's a carpenter during the day and a boxing instructor by night. And Ralph is a bartender and a voice actor. And Cortland is trying to make it in television. And they live in La Cañada, you know, which is not Hollywood, right? It's in the foothills. And it's just so odd. And so, yeah, Cortland and I were kind of co-producers, and Cortland wanted to be on the air. He was the guy that did the Scottish voice. He did. He had a name, a funny name, but he was the Scottish guy.
Wasn't his drop? That's incorrect.
That's exactly
Scottish
right.
Accent?
That's incorrect.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Screams at you. Yes. And those are some funny bits. And he did quite a few voices. And but Cortland, that's what he wanted to do. He had no interest in staying after hours, calling publicists or faxing publicists or being available 24 hours a day when publicists would call and say, I have XYZ star that wants to come on. And it was frustrating to management because they really wanted celebrities. They wanted celebrities on the show. They wanted bands. They wanted someone backstage, behind the scenes to orchestrate that. And it wasn't, it just wasn't, that's what he wasn't interested in that. So then I started helping out more and more. And eventually Cortland left and Kevin Weatherly and Trip Reeb said, we think you can do this. Why don't you just give it a shot? And they gave me a certain amount of time, like 6 months or something, and said, if you kick ass, the job's yours. And I went in there and I murdered it. I absolutely freaking murdered it. But it was painful. It was every morning, you know, you getting there at 4:15, 4:30, and then leaving at 7 o'clock at night. No exceptions.
Wow.
Because in Hollywood, anyone that works there, you know that publicists and managers, they all get to work at 10. And as they're sipping their coffee, and then they don't really get started until 11. Then they start taking meetings in early afternoon, and then they start calling all the people back in the late afternoon, early evening. So if you want to book someone the next day, you have to be ready when they call. And I started using my PageNet pager, right? If you recall the little pagers everyone had. And so I would call a publicist in the morning and say, hey, I want to book whoever. And this is after faxing, right? You'd have to do that occasionally. You'd have to fax people back and forth your letter on letterhead to say, hey, it's Kevin and Bean Show. Here are ratings. Here's one we want you on. Here's the whole pitch. And I would put my page or number on there. And so I could be editing or whatever, and I would get their call. And it just didn't work. Like they would call me, then I'd call them. Then finally I got a Zach Morris brick phone. I finally got my Motorola brick phone, right? Because only doctors, lawyers, and ballers had cell phones in the mid-90s. And it was worth it. So it was dual purpose. I had my phone that I could give it to them, and the publicist could call me whenever, and I could book the guest for the next morning, or I could do it with live events. And that's really when we started doing phone-ins. Because prior to that, remember, it was all a payphone. And how do you do a bit out in the street? And you'd have to be tethered to a payphone has a 30-inch cord. There's nowhere you can go on a payphone. So once we got that phone, it changed everything. Then we were doing all the man on the street stuff. And it was, you know, and I'm sure that a lot of morning shows were doing. Howard Stern was doing with Gary Delabate and his cast as well. And that's when it really started, where I was going out a lot and we were doing the streaking Santa Claus and the streaking jack-o'-lantern. And then, you know, now we were free. We were absolutely untethered. And that changed, I think, everything. At a moment's notice, we could be, you know, at a funny situation following Rick Dees. Michael, the maintenance man, has got the brick phone and he's out at Rick Dees' house, or, you know, anything. So that really was groundbreaking for us.
And that's where all the bullhorn stunts started, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah, the bullhorn stunts. That was simultaneous. So when I got there, I think Michael was already kind of there a little bit. And Michael was, as you know, the real, he was the maintenance man for 3500 West Olive. He was the guy. And he was just a loud black man that was funny and jubilant. And just he really was a joy to be around, no joke. And we really enjoyed him. And they pushed him. And at that time in the 90s, you could push him.
I remember Michael, the maintenance man, and I actually have a clip of Streaking Jack-O-Lantern that has him.
Michael, the maintenance man, and Lightning out in front of a Southland convenience store. We'll talk to them in a moment, but first, sing it if you know it, kids.
Halloween, Halloween, ooh, Halloween.
Michael, sing it.
Ghostly fever.
Very nice. You know, the really good thing about Halloween being today is that we won't have to hear this song again for another 51 weeks. So listen, you're there with your boy Lightning?
Yeah, I'm here with my boy Light.
Does he have a pumpkin on his head?
Yeah, he got a pumpkin on his head.
It's time for the first ever edition of Kevin Amin's Streaking Jack-O-Lantern.
Now, we did this last Christmas, I believe, and it was a huge hit. We all enjoyed it so much, including Lightning. Basically, what happened? Describe the rest of Lightning for us, Michael.
He's got a big old pumpkin on his head from the neck down, no clothes. And you know that myth about, you know, white men, right?
About white men?
you know, the eeny weeny.
Is that what's going on there at eeny weeny?
Yeah.
How about that?
Is that what's true with lightning?
The boy look like inchworming, man.
He's
inchworming.
He's inchworming.
All right, so lightning is naked from the neck down, and he's got a big old pumpkin on his head.
Yeah. Hey, Mike, let me ask you this question: are you sitting in the van right now?
No, I'm outside, man.
Where's lightning right now?
Lightning's on the side of the building.
All right, here's how the deal is going to work. You are at a 7-Eleven store?
Yeah.
Okay, here's the deal. They don't know we're coming, but we have their telephone number. And how are we going to work this? He's going to have to give Lightning some sort of a hand signal, perhaps after he sees the clerk answer the phone, maybe?
Well, Michael, just listen. I'm going to leave you on the line, okay?
Okay.
When you hear the guy from the 7-Eleven answer, give Lightning the signal.
Okay.
And then Lightning will run in and run around in there naked, and we're going to be talking to the guy on the phone inside.
Okay.
All right. This will be delightful for those folks.
I love this. Now, when we start talking to him, don't say anything else.
Okay.
All right.
Actually, I think we want him to wait just a few seconds.
Yeah, give us a few seconds, Mike. Don't.
And then signal Lightning. We're counting on you to do it from that end, all right? Hi, is this the 7-Eleven store?
Who's this?
This is Cheryl speaking.
Cheryl, hey. What's going on?
What's happening?
What's
Cheryl?
Happening?
I'm naked.
It's naked? What's happening, Cheryl?
Is there someone in the store?
I can't hear you. This man is running through the store butt naked.
We don't know anything about it.
Why is he running through the store butt naked?
Jeez.
He's living it up, isn't he?
Wow, he is living it up. Well, you better hang up the phone and call the authorities.
We're having a party in this place.
Happy Halloween.
Thank you.
Okay, see you later.
Bye now. Hey, call the police, Cheryl.
Hey, Mike?
Yeah.
Is he still in the store?
I like the game out, man.
Coming back out. Very nice.
Very nicely done.
Damn.
I still remember that. Naked. He's butt naked.
Naked. I remember Cheryl. So Cheryl got wise to our antics. Cheryl,
oh, no kidding.
Like, once we got into the Big Tad years of doing streaking Jack Lantern and whatnot, then Cheryl would just, she would see us coming. She would just open the door and go, come on in. Do what you got to do. And for those of you that don't know, 7-Eleven, because they were often manned by just one person, they had the, back in the day, the countertop would be in the middle of the 7-Eleven and the phone would be in the middle. It wasn't tucked against one wall. They had an island, you know?
Yeah.
And so you could run around that island. So that's what I was doing. And most of the 7-Elevens back in that day had that set up. So one person could see if anyone was, you know, stealing, they could see 360 all the way around them. And that was the theory. They did away with that. But yeah, Cheryl got wise to that. Yeah. And that was, so one time, it wasn't Michael. I forgot. One of them left me, and I had to run down the street naked, you know, with my hand over my crotch. And then we did the same thing that Tad later on. We ditched him, you know, and he's running down the street naked with I think he had a Santa hat on his junk. And yeah, those were good times. I have forgotten a lot about that.
You did some crazy stunts. You dressed as Cupid. You dressed as a chipmunk, a groundhog. You dressed as Madonna. You were on CNN as dressed as Madonna, right?
Yes. Yeah, that was Madonna's, I don't know if she had the sex album or whatever it was called, or some book. Oh, it was a book.
Oh, it was a book. Yeah. Book.
And so I dressed up like her and in my fishnets and the whole thing. And it was, I didn't ever like doing that stuff, but I thought, I was talking to Kevin not long ago because he's writing a book about some of these things that we used to do. And he goes, why did you do all that stuff? And I go, I don't know, because you wanted me to do it because it was funny. I knew that it would be funny. I knew that if I was in agony, it would be funny. And it was, you know, and because when Dad did it or Michael did it, whoever, I was laughing. So I figured it must be funny. It ain't going to be fun for me. I could tell you that for sure. But it seemed to work. It's conversation that you can have later. You know that people are hearing it. There was an electricity that at those years, even though in the early 90s, the ratings were crap, it felt electric. It did. You felt like you knew people were listening, and not the people, your moms and dads. You knew that like-minded people were listening. Other like young people that you cared about, right? That you'd be in a bar or somewhere talking to, like, oh, dude, I heard what you did. That was crazy. You're a moron, you know, but like you would, it was always conversation. And Kevin and I would joke that even getting a traffic ticket back in those days or doing something that was potentially illegal, you didn't care because, well, you cared, of course. No one wants to get a speeding ticket, but you knew that the silver lining was that you were going to talk about it on the radio. I was going to whisper it into Kevin's ear while he's, you know, in a commercial break and go, yeah, it sucks. I got pulled over for doing whatever. And he'd be like, oh my, what? And then it would turn into a topic. And then you're the, you know, the center of that topic, right? You're the impetus to get that conversation going, a phone topic or whatever it is. And I think that was kind of, you almost had a get out of jail free card because you were always turning your stupid antics or screw ups into content. When it sucked was when something, when you really did screw up and it didn't turn into an on-air bit, when they were too angry and then it didn't go anywhere. They just, it was off air. They go to management, you know, you botched it, you lost a piece of tape, whatever. When they were able to bring it on the air, then everything was fine. Meaning it still was painful to go through, but at least there was a payoff. You screwed up or you did something wacky and it was on the air. When it was off the air, you're like, ugh. Then it was just like anywhere we work now, which is you screw up and you get blasted by your boss and you just go home with your tail between your legs. When you're on the air and they're making a bit of it, you're like, well, hey, listen, how mad at me can you be? You just got 20 minutes of airtime out of me being a jackass, right? So yeah. It was, like I said, it was kind of a get out of jail free card.
Yeah. And you have stories now, like if someone tells you, oh, I was in the woods and I saw a mountain lion, you could be like, well, I was bait for a mountain lion covered in barbecue sauce.
Yes.
So yeah.
Yeah.
You always have that one up.
I forgot about that. I don't know if it was barbecue sauce. I did the barbecue sauce thing. I think it was on the roof. We did the Great American Sunscreen Challenge. And so I put sunscreen on one arm, but I put all these other barbecue sauces on legs and everywhere. Super sticky. And I was on the top of our building on the 14th floor, whatever it was, in like 110 degree heat. It was going to be the hottest day of the year. And I was up there laying on couches or on towels and stuff. And they brought me water because it was super hot. But and then when I was done, I went down to Michael, the maintenance man, I think, hosed me off down in the grassy area by the parking lot because it was so sticky. It was so sticky. It was gross. And then they put meat around me. I tested out a suit of meat. This is long before Lady Gaga's meat suit. And we were going to do running of the pit bulls. So the running of the bulls in Pamplona, Spain. And Kevin and I had already done running of the bulls in Pahrump, Nevada, or wherever it was. Mm-hmm. Where they trucked in a bunch of bowls and stuff. And that was super lame. That was the same trip we went to Area 51. Another story. So they thought, let's do running of the pit bulls. This will be really funny. We'll strap meat around Lightning and we'll have him run at the Burbank Equestrian Center, Hollywood Equestrian Center, whatever it was called. The one that William Shatner was always promoting, that place.
Yeah.
And I would just run around the track and see if the pit bulls would catch me and eat me or something, you know? And PETA ended up stomping that out because they said that we were going to worry animals, right? So I you would have heard all these stories on the B-Team podcast probably if you guys listened to that back in the day.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty sure that was the inspiration for the creation of this podcast.
We draw a lot. We draw a lot from the B-Team.
Isn't that funny that like I find it ironic and amusing that Dave and Omar didn't want to start that. Like they just thought it was going to be a massive time suck. And flash forward, boo, whoop, here's Omar with 12 different podcasts and Janky Town and all this stuff. I'm like, told you.
Yeah. Hey,
speaking of challenges, do you remember the water challenge?
Of course.
That was epic because they thought, oh, he's just talking out of his ass. He can't identify waters. And you schooled him. You got everyone right.
I mean, I wish I could say it was, I don't know if it was luck or what happened, but we had Arrowhead and someone had replaced the water jug with sparklets or something. And I'm like, ah, gross. And like, Ralph is gross. It's water. It's water. What's wrong with you? I said, no, it's not water. It's bitter. And he goes, bitter? What are you talking about? And I think that's how it started. He's like, oh, Lightning thinks he can tell us what kind of water he's drinking, you know? And yeah, so they went and got tap water. I don't know. One of them supposedly came from the toilet. Hopefully they took it from the tank and not the actual bowl. Cause that still makes me sick thinking about it today. They had Avion and Dasani and something else. I don't know, but Avion's a dead ring. Avion is sweet. It's obvious. If you guys can't guess Avion, you're fired. But yeah. And they put the Ralph did the waters in front of me and we had them all in like little paper Dixie cups, which is bad. Cause the paper also taints the flavor, right? You can taste the bleach or whatever's in the paper. I don't know. I can anyway. Yeah, I got them all right.
Sensitive water palate.
They lost
they lost their freaking minds. That part I do recall is that they were, Kevin was, he was watching with his own eyes and he's, there's no way, there's no way. And we went through it all. And I think the other thing that happened that was similar is that, so I'm a chocoholic. I love chocolate and I was always eating. And back, this is, remember there, we take it for granted, Red Bull and Rockstar and Monster that we're all around today. There were no energy drinks. You drank in to get up early. You had coffee, cocaine, meth, or, you know, you like, what did you do to get up really early to do what you had to do? There was just coffee, right? I hate hot drinks. I don't even like cocoa. And So sugar was the way that I would wake up. I'd have a candy bar every morning or whatever, and a Snickers or something. And that was another time when Ralph was just like, how are you eating all this? And I was never fit like Catherwood, would like Psycho Mike, you know, he's super yoked, but I was never like an absolute chub, you know, fatty or anything, but I was always eating chocolate. And so one day they had enough, how much chocolate could I take? And they zip tied me to the chair and in the studio, I walked in, you always know what happens. You walk into the studio and then there's someone who immediately stands against the door and they block the door. So you cannot leave. You know, you're fucked. Can I curse on the show? I don't know.
Sorry. Yeah, you can fuck.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then, so I'm not used to, because on my podcast, it's G. It's like, or yeah, we're E for everyone. Anyway, so there, I forget who's against the door, but someone immediately is against the door and I go, oh no. And I look over and Ralph is sitting there with one of those liter or half liter bottles of Hershey's squirt syrup, right? In the squirty bottles. And they go, they do this thing about me eating chocolate and whatnot. And they're like, they're sick of it. They're going to give me so much chocolate that I'll never eat chocolate again. And so they zip tie me to the chair from what I recall. And Ralph grabs my head, pulls my head back and takes the whole bottle and squirts all of it. And I'm now sucking down a liter of Hershey syrup. And I got jittery. I'm not going to lie. Like I didn't feel well, but I didn't barf or anything. And, it was, yeah, it worked. And it astounded them that I was like a sewer, right? It just didn't matter what you poured down me or did. I was the cockroach that, oh, I'm out of focus. I was the cockroach that wasn't going to die.
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
It's like a scene in Goodfellas where they're going to off you.
Yeah. Yeah. It felt like that too. Cause Ralph didn't pull the Hershey syrup around from the side of the table until they had already explained the bit. So I didn't know what I was in for. And that would happen every once in a while when you didn't know what you were walking into. The other time is I loved off-road. I loved dirt bikes and side-by-sides and all that stuff. And, you know, my thing is that a lot of that time you had your Strikers and Kat and Nicole, and they were doing a lot of appearances, and Kevin Bean would do appearances and stuff like that. And they, you know, and you know, they would get paid pretty well to do those. And I did a fair amount, but me, my real payday was getting products, I really liked creating relationships with manufacturers of dirt bikes or helmets or whatever. And I befriended a guy from AXO and he said, I'm going to take care of you. I was going to do an event with them. And so he sent me a few boxes of gear, like a helmet, two sets of leathers, the whole thing, like maybe like $2,000 worth of stuff. I didn't know it had arrived. And I went to go bring Kevin Bean some papers and I go to push the door. And there was no lock on the door. Literally, there's no lock on the door. And in many cases, there wasn't even a handle. You just open the studio K door. We had KROQ. Push the door. You just walk in because you're in and out all the time. And I go to push the door and it doesn't move. And I'm like, here we go. What's going on? You know, there's something. They don't want me in for some reason. I look through the glass. I walk around to Studio R and I see boxes of stuff. And I couldn't tell what was in them. And Ralph goes down and he opens one box and he goes, boom, puts a helmet on the counter. And I go, oh no, and I didn't know exactly what was going to transpire. So they went on and took caller 20, gave all my stuff away. So they gave away all my gear.
And they give your stuff away. That's
obviously
amazing.
It's funny. Like if I were in Ralph Kevin Bean's shoes, I would have thought that was hilarious. Me, I go, how am I going to tell the guy who just sent me $2,000 worth of riding apparel that they just gave it away? Anyway, I did. And he's like, oh, no, we heard it. It was hilarious. We got some airtime out of it. I'll just resend you everything. I was like, ah,
oh, what a great ending.
That is awesome.
It was groovy. They were local guys that got it. They got the joke and stuff. And so, anytime you could pull a prank, we did it, you know, like Kevin and Bean, I was super bummed. I really, to this day, really wish I was on that trip. I had to work the weekend. Somebody else called in sick, so I couldn't get off, but it was Kevin's bachelor party in Vegas. So it was Ralph, Cortland, Jimmy, Adam, like, so Kevin, I'm trying to think if there was anybody else, and they rented an RV and they took
Bean,
it to Vegas.
Bean, right? The party animal.
What's that?
Bean, right?
Yeah, no, Bean was definitely not there, for sure not there. Anyway, so they had a no crapping in the toilet policy because they didn't want to have to pay the dumping fee when they got the RV back, the rental RV. So they get it back and they said, hey, you know, we got to return the RV, and it's across the street. I look out the window. Sure enough, there's the RV sitting right there on, I forget the side street right there next to, I look down 10 floors. There it is. And they said, you need to go empty out the tank. I'm like, and off air, I go, I knew that was illegal. You can't dump all that crap literally on the street. You know, you have to go to a dumping station and dispose of it properly. It's like, I don't know what kind of a fine, but I know it ain't cheap. And they're like, no, it's just, we said there was nobody could crap in there. It's just going to be some pee. It's fine. And just let it go. It's just gray water. Just put it out in the curb. And so you can take it back after the show, take the RV back and return it for us. I take the phone out there and I said, there's two here, guys. There's the black water. Hopefully that's empty, right? Because that's the bad stuff, right? That's if someone went number two. And they go, we told Adam and Jimmy, there's no taking a crap. It was only a 4-hour drive. They were supposed to hold it. And I go, okay, well, I'm going to pull the black and then I'll pull the gray. And the black is the crap and the gray is water or any, you know, and I figured nothing was going to come out. Sure enough, I pull the black. Oh, boom. It just rolls out. It's instant. It's oh my God. I go, guys, there's the black tank. There's stuff in the black tank. And now it's in the curb. Mind you, I am in front of Kiss FM. It's parked on curbside in front of Kiss FM.
Shit.
Whoops.
And now it's coming out. It's human excrement in the gutter in front of Kiss FM. I immediately close there's a back pressure. I close the black tank and I open the gray tank just because it's supposed to be water, and it goes out and it kind of flushes it further down the curb. It's a fair amount though. It's like, there was some big horse turds in there. And
goddamn, Jimmy.
I closed it. And then I got the RV and I drove it around the block so nobody would know it was us.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were seriously though. We were concerned that time because it's a legitimate fine of some sort, or it's very frowned upon. And we didn't get hammered for that one. Yeah. So we lucked out, and I had a lot of, you know, escapades in that building with Kiss FM. I'm sure everyone listening remembers Rick Dees, hopefully.
And yeah.
Rick Dees was the big, you know, fake DJ back in the day. And we loved to, you know, we were the underdogs, you know, for so many years. We had our ratings sucked, and he was massive. It was him and Jay Thomas and Mark and Brian and Howard Stern and whatnot. But the one that you don't talk about Howard Stern. So that's off limits because then he destroys everyone. So he just, and we work for the same company. That's a different story. But Rick Dees and Mark and Brian, we went after him with a vengeance, as you know. And Scott Mason was big into, Scott Mason had media passes from the, from LAPD, and he could go anywhere. If there was a fire, Scott Mason could walk into the building. He had so many passes hanging around his neck. And he also had radios in his office. He would receive all of the police channels, fire channels. He was also like some kind of, I think he was actually somehow affiliated with LAFD, LA Fire Department. Like he had official status with the fire department. So anyway, one day we get a call he hears on the radio that there's a problem in the building across 3400 West Olive, which is the Kiss FM building. There was an elderly man down or something. And he walks in and into the studio and goes, hey, sounds like it's on the same floor as where Rick is. And we immediately said, oh my God, it's Rick. He's old. He's 90, you know, because he's been lying about his age for all these years, saying he's 40. He's really like 60. You go, it's got to be Rick Dees. He's got to be. Is he dead? Is he dying? So I take my Zach Morris brick phone and I walk across the street. I go up to their floor, and it is all thick plexiglass,
like, so there's like, you walk into a bank today, right? And this is really weird because we didn't have anything like that. You walk at K-Rock and there's the receptionist. You could punch her. You know, literally just there's nothing between you. There's the woman sitting at a desk. Yeah. But Kiss FM was behind the thick plexi for God knows what reason. Probably because they were giving out concert tickets and stuff. That's where you picked up your stuff. Maybe they were worried about theft or whatever. I remember though taking my Zach Morris phone and putting it down there and kind of towards the glass to get the woman's response. I go, "Hey, we hear that Rick Dees could be ill. Is that?" And she's like, "What are you talking about? Who are you on with?" And she just assumed I was I was with the radio station. So I've got my phone and I'm holding it to the glass and she doesn't know what to do. And she figures out who I'm from and whatnot. I sit down on the couch to talk to the guys. I'm waiting to the end of the song to fade to do another segment from their lobby, from the Kiss lobby. And I look down and through the door, it's a glass door. And I see this guy with kind of long hair coming, but he was in a suit. And the door busts open. He walks right up and he doesn't even hesitate. He grabs me like this by the scruff of my, and he pulls me out of the chair and he starts bitching about Kevin and Bean and who are you and you guys are here and why are you taking shots at Kiss FM and Rick Dees? You'll never be as good as Rick Dees. And he takes me right into the elevator. And I'm walking backwards with the phone and I'm on now with Kevin and Bean. I'm like, go live. This guy's straight. He's going to punch me. And I don't know who it is. I assume it's the GM, the general manager. And I'm backing up. And he scruff of the neck and he puts me against the wall in the elevator. And he's just screaming at me. He's screaming at me like his jugulars, like Julia. What's her name? The actress. Help me out.
Julia Roberts.
Julia Roberts with her vein up here. It's in his neck. Right. And he. And he's pissed. And so I'm on with Kevin and Bean. It's kind of shaky because I'm going down the elevator. We get to the bottom and he gets security, wrangles the building security to corral me and make sure that I don't go anywhere as he calls the cops for harassment. And so he goes upstairs and leaves me there. And I'm sitting there for like 10 minutes. And then I think, why am I sitting here? I just get up and I walked back to my building. At one point, he's holding me. Where's the camera? He's holding me like this, and his other hand is like this. Like he's going to punch me. He's that mad that we're having a field day with Rick Dees. Now, meanwhile, he's dating Ellen, you know, Rick Dees' sidekick. I don't know any of this. This all happens later. They get married, the whole thing.
Wait. So who was this guy?
Roy Laughlin. Oh, now, okay. Here's what's funny about that. CBS Radio hires Roy Laughlin to be a market manager to oversee us. Yes.
No.
So Kevin and Bean recount this story and Roy just laughs it off. Oh, that was just radio antics. And he was just a colossal douchebag. I would say it to his face. He's a douchebag. And we did not like him. And he was just one of those smarmy salesmen that just everything he said was just whatever he needed to say to make the deal. But yeah, he worked for our company for a couple of years. And then they finally blew him out because they realized he was just the sack of shit. So
was he the guy that had all the weird sayings like thoughts or things? Was that
that's
him?
The guy? Oh, that's the God. Guy. Yeah, thoughts or things. Yep.
Oh man, Ralph loved to take him to task.
Yeah, and yeah. he was a like a legitimate whack-a-mole, is as Ralph would say. He had these crazy theories about the way we should be advertising and marketing ourselves and just stuff that didn't work for our. It was off brand. You know what I mean? I know we all get, if you're in marketing, it's like, do something that's on brand. Well, he was off brand. He was not a guy. Like, I can't tell you how many times we fought against Dockers. You know, they wanted us to promote Dockers. It was going to be the wheel roast presented by Levi's Dockers. We're like, no, that's wrong. Don't do that.
Brought to you by Dockers.
It was going to be like presented by this car manufacturer, whoever. It was just, they're like, well, it's going to be $1 million. We're like, it doesn't matter. The only thing the station has going for it is its brand, is its like its rebelliousness, which we all know today is why the station sucks. It doesn't have any rebelliousness. It's so PC. There's nothing you can do to, and where do people go? Young people go today that want rebelliousness. They go to YouTube. That's where they get it. They go where they can get it, right? Like, what do they say? Well, you take a frog and you put him in lukewarm water and you heat it up slowly, you cook him and you kill him. But if you dump a frog in boiling water, he jumps right out. What happened to us is happened to K-Rock is that it took a decade for that water to reach boiling. And by that time, all the DJs had cooked. And so management just went in there and pluck the dead bodies out, basically. You know what I mean? That so many things had changed. You had taken really rebellious people and forced them to no longer be rebellious. And it doesn't work. You know, there were a bunch of, you know, even though Kevin and Bean were from Arizona and they were pretty conservative guys, and you know, they had real rebellious streaks and very, very anti-establishmentarianism feelings and very punk rock ethos. Not saying that Klein, who is the current morning show on K-Rock, is not funny. He is a funny guy, but it's just hard to listen to them not be able to say what they really think.
It's very...
And we could.
Real quick, before we leave off on the radio part, when you left the show, it was to run the website, right? And that was a new thing for K-Rock.
Yeah, yeah.
Like we had last people to ever get a website.
Right. Scott McKay, who we had hired from Earthlink, met Scott McKay shortly. Kevin and his wife were friends with Scott McKay, and Scott was helped Kevin with all of his charity work and charity website, things like that, way back in the day when Earthlink was a thing. And Scott worked at Earthlink, and Scott was the one that webcast my wedding. I webcast my wedding in 1998. No one was webcasting back then.
Wow.
Watch, it was lightningsfirstwedding.com.
Wow. That's crazy. That's fun.
And as if there was going to be multiple weddings, because I would get divorced. That's what they assumed. And so Scott McKay came over from Earthlink, was the digital guy at K-Rock, was the sales guy, and trying to do all the content, everything himself. And everything was HTML back in those days. And so I just thought that the future was going to be video. And I really loved video. And I was doing some video work with Kevin and Bean while still there. And I had given, and Alex was there, Alex, my assistant. And I basically just exported my entire Outlook, you know, all my contacts as a CSV file, and imported it in her computer right next to me. And she, I'm like, ignore all the car people. You don't need anyone from Toyo Tires, but everybody else you can use, you know? And so she had all the publicists instantly and all that stuff. And so she was in theory off to the races, and I stayed there for like 6-8 months, whatever, kind of in an interim. And then I just went down the hallway, and Trip Reeb, who was the enemy of fun, our general manager, he moved on, and he had a big palatial office with skylights and I made it look like NASA. I put screens everywhere, and we did the whole thing. I had surround sound, and we debuted all the new music videos in my office. It was cool, you know, and that lasted for a couple of years there. And then I got poached to go work for CBS corporate. So although I was in the K-Rock building, I was poached, and I worked and received my paycheck from CBS corporate. And then that lasted, I don't know, what, another 5, 6, 7 years, something like that. And then we had a big team working for us. And we were in charge of, so when we went to Weenie Roast, we weren't just webcasting and for the K-Rock, we would send it to all of the alternative rock stations under the CBS umbrella, basically. And that's what I was overseeing. So, and we, K-Rock got all of the rock stars and all of that stuff. So I was kind of the conduit for a lot of that content that went to other radio stations. So it was us and XRK and XRT and then XRK and some other big alternative stations that we had, and us three kind of like all, you know, contributed and spread our content out everywhere. And then that lasted for a while. And then when they finally sold to Entercom, CBS said, we don't want to be in the radio business anymore. The writing was on the wall that it was going to go sideways. And I bounced, and it was crazy, you know, leaving radio after all those years, but it wasn't the same radio station. Kevin and Bean were miserable. It was just one thing led to another. There was the Kevin and Bean, there was Ralph being let go and Doc being let go and Lisa being let go. And the new company coming in, it was just a different atmosphere, a whole different vibe. And so in short, I met the guy who just walked in my office a few moments ago, and he's a legend in motorsport. He's been doing, you know, racing parts and stuff since 1958. And I had built what we called the Rock Crusher. It was a big lifted truck. And, you know, being able to still be in touch with Nicole and Omar and Dave and Muggs. And I was out to breakfast with Kevin a couple of weeks ago, and I talked to Bean. And so I get all the pleasures of still interacting with those guys kind of on different terms without all the stresses attached. And it's awesome. So yeah, I mean, I'm very blessed that way. You know, people throw that term around, I'm blessed, you know, but I do feel that I've been very fortunate in that I came out the other side of radio and, you know, with a great group of friends and a new career. And it's been really, really cool.
That's really awesome.
It sounds like we need to wrap this up, but I was going to ask if either you want to promote anything here or if you want to say anything to your Kevin and Bean Creative Universe followers
or the Social Club
fans. Yeah.
So for anyone if for anyone that is into trucks, I co-host a podcast and I do this for Motor Trend. It's owned by Discovery Channel and Motor Trend. It's called The Truck Show Podcast. It's, you know, The Truck Show Podcast. It's everywhere. We're sponsored by Nissan. We're 195 episodes deep and we haven't missed a week. It's awesome. And we have everyone that's important in the truck world, from the CEOs of GM, Ford, Ram, all the way down to truck club presidents and everything in between. We love entrepreneurs. So I doubt that a big portion of your audience is into trucks, but if they are, it is a really fun podcast. And you'll notice the production. The production is very Omar. It's very Lightning. It feels very Kevin and Bean. Both me and my co-host, you know, he was an obsessive Kevin and Bean fan, and I obviously worked there. So it feels very morning show like, but we're talking about trucks. Talking to the audience, if Kevin and Bean fans are listening, I think that you guys are awesome for sticking with them all of these years, because I can tell you that I can't speak for Kevin and Bean and won't, but I genuinely know that they are incredibly grateful. And I know that's very cliche to say, like, we wouldn't be here without our audience. No, at post career, yeah, that audience is really important to look, the Kevin and Bean Social Club, what you guys are doing. It really matters, because because remember, like I said, the reset button that you do every morning at 5:35, that's all gone. Like, there is no more after they've left the radio station. Like, how do they look back? How do they reminisce? They don't have to. You guys are doing it for them. You know, you're out there. They made real dents in your lives, good or bad. And for me, I feel the same way. It's amazing. And it trips me out when I'm in a restaurant with my wife and someone will introduce me as Lightning, and they'll go like, "Yeah, it's Lightning." I'm like, "Oh my God, I listened to you. Like, I remember when you were dressed up like a sperm at Gecko's in Huntington Beach or whatever." Like, I was like, "What?" And so it's cool. It's sinew that ties us all together. I'm really grateful.
All right. So, I've got one last question. What's the update on the K-Rock documentary?
That's interesting that you ask that. I am supposed to have a call with Nate Adams, the director, in the next couple of days. It's been funded. Now, the footage has all been captured. All the footage is done. That's been done for quite a while. So your Bono, your Coldplay, your Green Day, your Rage Against the Machine, those are all done. We interviewed all the DJs, even ones that are now passed away, like Raimondo and some of the former general managers, things like that. We went all the way back to 1976 when the station was AM. So it goes back.
Wow.
As of today, it is being sold as a multi-part series.
That's great.
That is the story. And it needs to be edited because he's got hundreds of hours of footage. But I can tell you that the 8-minute sizzle reel, which I've begged him to let me share, I just watched it again about a week ago. For real Kevin and Bean fans, it'll make you cry. Like, it'll make you go, "Oh, wow." As a listener, I was part of this. And for me, I was there for a lot of it. You know, I wasn't there in the 80s, but in the 90s, 2000s, I was there. And you go, I mean, I watched Nicole watch it. I watched her watch the trailer, and she welled up. She goes, "Wow, holy shit. Like, we worked there. Like, we work." Well, she still works there. But it's like, it's that. You go, wow. Wow. They're keeping it under wraps because I don't know why Nate just doesn't want to let it out yet, but it's neat. It's a lot of yesteryear. It's a lot of walking down memory lane. And I'm when it comes out, I'm going to feel really bad for those that are still at the radio station, because there's no way to not compare what it was versus what it is. Right. And I'm not saying it's not a good station today, but it's a very different radio station.
Different, yeah.
Very different.
Right. With that, I love you guys. Thank you for doing what you're doing. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for coming on.
No problem.
Thank you so much.
All right, rock out.
Bye.
Bye.